If I was a forecaster trying to predict for the grocery store how many of each I needed to order on a daily, weekly, monthly basis, I would lose my mind if I tried to do it on a spreadsheet. It would not be practical. It would not be possible.
Growing a business requires a holistic approach that extends beyond sales and marketing. This approach needs alignment among people, processes, and technologies. So if you're a business owner, operations, or finance leader looking to learn growth strategies from your peers and competitors, you're tuned into the right podcast. Welcome to the WBS Podcast, where scalable growth using business systems is our number one priority. Now, here is your host, Sam Gupta.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the WBS Podcast. I'm Sam Gupta, your host and principal consultant at digital transformation consulting firm Elevate IQ. As your business grows, it's hard to find that Goldilocks zone of inventory so that neither you lose on opportunities nor lock your cash down. Sales and operations planning is easier said than done. The problem becomes even more complex when you might have a high mix of your products, especially if you might be tracking your KPIs manually or on a spreadsheet. In today's episode, we have our guest Mike Ryan, who discusses how to do sales and operations planning appropriately for a growing business. He also discusses his lessons learned from various KPIs pertaining to sales and operations planning and how to streamline them to maintain appropriate levels of inventory and cash. Finally, he shares his insights into several inflection points of growth for businesses and their needs for proper S&OP systems. Let me introduce Mike to you. Mike Ryan has freed up more than $275 million from inventory across his career, unlocking piles of cash for his clients that are often hiding in plain sight. Besides being an inventory iceberg crusher, Mike is seen as an EBITDA engineer, as a GE trained and certified Six Sigma black belt with more than 25 years of experience. He has solved inventory issues for both middle market and Fortune 500 businesses, translating into optimized inventory, customer satisfaction, improved cash flow, and EBITDA. With that, let's get to the conversation.
Hey, welcome to the show, Mike.
Thank you, Sam. It is so good to be here with you.
I'm so excited to discuss the inventory because that is always a problem during my engagement that I do with ERP. So I'm super passionate to learn about that. But before we get there, do you want to start with your personal story and current focus, Mike?
I would love to. Thank you, Sam. So I am a ceramic engineer by trade. And right out of college, I went into the most traditional of ceramic industries in that I made sinks and toilets. And it was during that period of my career that I really started to understand process. From there, I had an opportunity to join GE Super Abrasives, in which we made industrial diamond. And the way I like to describe it is I went from making a product that everybody needs in toilets to a product that everybody wants with diamonds. Yeah. And with GE, that's really where I got that Six Sigma training and the idea of having a process that's definable, predictable, and repeatable really got hammered into me. And what I learned is that process is transportable. So when that GE division was sold, I had a decision to make. Do I try and stick around with the business or do I make my own way? And from there, I leveraged the process experience to get into Goodyear Tire and Rubber, actually in corporate finance. The finance process needed process. So it needed really an overhaul to dig into what was working well, what they need to do more of, and what they needed to do less of.
Yeah.
And after a couple of years of that, I said, okay, this is great. I've learned a ton about the business. I've learned a ton about finance, but I want to get back to my roots in manufacturing and supply chain and operations. Yeah. And it was at that point that I was introduced to sales and operations planning. And the process spoke to me because it had all the functions represented. It had sales, manufacturing, supply chain, procurement, marketing, finance, all sitting around the table, talking at a level to really understand, here's where we want the business to go, set the strategy, and then begin to work in, here are the things we need to do on a regular cadence to keep the business moving. And for me, that was really where I started to get the understanding of how critical inventory was and how inventory tied to cash flow.
Yeah.
So once we got the process to where it was steady state, externally class A certified sales and operations planning, the other thing I learned about myself, Sam, is I am not a good maintainer. For me, I'm the guy you call when your car is in the ditch. I will get you out of the ditch. I will get you up on the road, put you on the right path, get you off and running.
Yep.
Keeping the car between the guide rails or simply managing the business, to me, that's better handled by somebody else. So I went looking for my next opportunity, and it came with sales and operations planning. A business called Carlisle Brake and Friction was looking to implement the global process. And I said, this literally has my name written all over it. Worked into an interview with the president of the business. He said, you're the right guy for this. And with S&OP, it really coming in under that umbrella, it gave me an opportunity very early to understand the business from stem to stern. Spent a couple years with Carlisle and then went to a small family office owned business. And it was really then that I realized these corporate big company best practices could absolutely be leveraged in smaller businesses.
Yep.
And it didn't need 100 people deep worth of resources. It really just needed key representation from each of the functions and having meaningful conversations that were metrics driven to get everybody working together. And from there, that business served the oil and gas industry very, very heavily. And when the oil and gas bubble popped, that business to some extent popped. So I found myself saying, okay, I can put my hand, you know, I can put my fate in the hands of others, or I can figure out and make my own way, because I realized I had something to give, especially for those middle market businesses, those businesses that weren't publicly traded, weren't on the stock exchange, but made up of regular good people that may not have that exposure to these best practices. And Sam, how I got to inventory was I printed out 20 years worth of resumes and I looked for the common themes and common threads. One of them was Six Sigma and Lean, continuous improvement. I'm like, okay, but that really doesn't, I didn't feel like that had a hook. Where as I started digging deeper, I see American Standard, inventory, Goodyear, $200 million worth of inventory, Carlisle, $65 million, and on and on. And I'm like, inventory is the common thread, because to me, inventory is an output, and you can shape that output by understanding the balance between supply and demand. So that for me was how I got into inventory, because I realized that there are so many businesses out there that struggle. Either they've got too much inventory and it kills their cash flow, or they don't have enough of the right inventory at the right time. And then they end up with very, very unhappy, angry, frustrated customers. So to me, it was that natural fit, that natural progression between sales and operations planning as the umbrella and inventory as the link to cash, that I said, this is my mission. I want to go out and help as many businesses as I can, not only deliver on their customer needs, but deliver on the needs of the business itself.
Okay, amazing. And I could not agree more. Inventory is definitely the heart of the business. And sometimes people say that this conversation is slightly biased, but I have seen this in the ERP implementations as well, that if you don't get inventory right, then obviously your organizational view or the ERP view is most likely is not going to be right. So on that note, I am going to start with the next question. And the next question is very standard, and that is going to be perspective on growth. So Mike, what does growth mean to you when you think of this keyword?
So how inventory relates to growth for me, Sam, is that if you don't have the right product at the right time, no matter how fantastic your product is, you're not going to have the revenue to grow the business. You're not going to have the profits to grow the business. Whether you're a manufacturer or a distributor, understanding that having the product the customer wants when they want it, ultimately that's job one. Because if you don't have something in stock, customer is simply going to go someplace else. I mean, it really is that simple. So if I'm on Amazon and I'm looking at a spatula or a sieve or a houseware, and I go to buy it from company A and they don't have it, I'm just going to go to company B. Even if company A has my preferred color, if it's not in stock, right, I'm going to pick the purple one that I know I can get tomorrow. So really, just as quickly as I can tell the story, that's as quick as decisions are made. If you don't have the right product at the right time, you're not going to have the revenue. And quite frankly, you're not going to have a business.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, amazing. So now the next question I'm going to have, Mike, is going to be around the S&OP planning. So I know that, let's say, in the inventory world, and a lot of manufacturers might be familiar with that, right? They might sort of know that what S&OP planning is, but I don't know how many people know to do it well. So touch on what S&OP planning is. That is number one. You can answer this question in the form of any stories that you have seen where the company sort of knew that they were doing the S&OP planning, but the planning wasn't as you would like to do as an S&OP consultant. So tell us what an S&OP planning is and what are some good ways of doing it and what are some not so good ways of doing it that you have seen in your experience.
So starting with what a good sales and operations planning process is, it begins with the customer. It begins with demand and sales saying, hey, I know my customer. I know how many I can sell. I know how many I need. And then turning around to manufacturing and saying, hey, I need this many of product A, this many product B, this many product C. Manufacturing then saying, I can do that. I can build a supply plan to meet the needs of sales. And then ultimately, it's looking to see financially sales, the top line revenue, manufacturing ultimately creates the bottom line cost. Does that produce the profit that the business needs? So in 30 seconds or less, sales and operations planning takes the needs of sales, the demand, brings it up against the supply that manufacturing provides, and then works with finance to make sure, does it meet the needs of the business? Now, let's start with the S&OP done poorly, because I've got plenty of stories there. That's probably the easier one to tell. Yeah. I was working with a business where every year they went to a big industry show and touted, hey, we've got this new innovative product. This is what's new. This is the product of the year. And the dealers and the wholesalers and the distributors would put their orders in right at the show and then wait with bated breath for the manufacturer to deliver. And guess what? The manufacturer didn't. It would take 30, 60, 90 days before their first orders would even begin to ship. So what would happen is year after year, have the big annual industry show, dealers would put orders in knowing that the business was going to let them down. And over time, what happened was this business was losing business to their competition, even though the competition's product weren't as innovated, weren't as on brand for what the market needed. The business was losing revenue simply because they couldn't deliver. So in this case, this happens to be tires, something near and dear to my heart. And coupled with the annual giant auto show is, hey, here's the newest tire technology, the latest, the greatest. And people were excited. They're like, hey, this is what's new. This is going to deliver better form, fit, and function. I know I can sell these. I know the car owners are going to love these. I want these tires. And the way the business was planning, or I should actually be more accurate to say lack of planning, they wouldn't start building these tires until the orders started coming in, which meant they were already late, Sam. They were late at the moment they took that first order. And then what would happen was they would end up with 6 months worth of the old tire and 0 months of the new tire and wondering why profits were down. So what we did was we said, hey, sales and marketing, we know today when the car show is next year, right? We know what the destination is. Let's work backwards and say 6 months prior to launch of this new tire, we need to start burning down, consuming our old inventory and start ramping up and filling the pipeline with the new inventory. So we developed, it was a phase in, phase out process. So we were consuming inventory that in the past would not have sold, and we were building up inventory to fill the pipelines. So the moment that annual auto show, the date showed up on the calendar, the business was able to say, we have 2 weeks of inventory for you in stock with your name on it. May I please have your order? And by having the new product in inventory to back up the sale, Sam, it went through the roof. That was one of the best years this business ever had, simply because they had communications linking sales, marketing, operations, and they began with the end in mind. We know when the show is next year. Let's use that and plan backwards and not be surprised on the day of the show when we get orders for our new products. So that was a case where taking what we knew and knowing that there literally was a day circled on the calendar, it helped us plan and it got the communication going in a very structured way to understand, hey, this is the outcome we're trying to achieve. This is the potential, both in terms of cash from the inventory that's going to get consumed, as well as the new revenues, the growth that's going to be generated. And this all happened under that umbrella of sales and operations planning.
Okay, so I would like to go one level deeper into the story and some more colors, okay? So when, let's say, they were doing this sales and operations planning before making the changes, before going to the annual auto show, what were the kind of metrics that they were tracking? What were the flaws in the method that they were utilizing for the sales and operations planning? What was the disconnect? Was the disconnect primarily from the communication perspective? Was the disconnect primarily from the inventory planning perspective? Was it just misalignment in the organization? So go one or two level deeper into the story. Put as much color as you can to the story. Can you do that?
I can. So initially, this was when the S&OP process was relatively new and not very mature. The two metrics that were driving the process, one is on-time delivery. Okay. And then the other one was a manufacturing metric of absorption. And sometimes these metrics can align, but most often they don't. So one way to have really high on-time delivery is to have a ton of inventory, is to just literally stuff the pantry with as many pieces, parts, and products as you can. Now, while on-time delivery can be exceptional, if you use that bloated inventory method, your cash flow and your working capital are going to be horrendous. The other driver in this case, you know, manufacturing was looking at absorption. They were looking at utilization. And in that case, you know, manufacturing tries to make as many as possible, as quickly as possible, to lower the per unit cost. So if it costs me $10 an hour in fixed overhead, if I make 10 parts, that means I have a dollar per part overhead. If I can make 100 parts, now I've got a 10 cent per part overhead. So the absorption looks fantastic. So if you're measuring absorption, your absorption is through the roof, but the second order impact or the unintended consequence is your cash flow just goes down tubes. So it was stepping back and saying, hey, we can get to really great on-time delivery rates by making sure we have enough inventory, not too much inventory, just enough of the right inventory. And then stepping back from using absorption in manufacturing as the primary driver to a different metric that we called schedule adherence. So if I give you a schedule and that schedule has five different items and the quantities for those five items, how well did you manufacturing do in hitting that schedule, right? And the goal with the schedule is to make what the schedule says, not too few, not too many. We want you to make what the schedule says. So by shifting the metric from manufacturing absorption to schedule adherence, it really drove the plant to make what sales said they needed and what the customer demand created. So by shifting the metrics a little bit, digging into that second level metric, it really helped the process get in line and make the right stuff at the right time.
Okay, amazing. So now we are going to be talking about the two terms that you have been speaking a lot, and that is going to be on-time delivery and absorption. And I'm not even sure if all of my audience is going to be familiar with these terms. So can you describe them a bit more? And can you describe how this is going to be applicable in different industries?
Okay, so on-time delivery is, do you have the product that the customer wants when they are ready to order it. So if today is Monday and I promise you delivery on Wednesday, if you receive that delivery in Wednesday, then you had 100% on-time delivery. If you did not receive that delivery on Wednesday, then you had 0% on-time delivery. On an individual order level, it's very binary. So let's say on Monday, I had 100 orders that were due to ship. If I ship 95 of those 100 orders out on time, then I have 95% on-time delivery. So it really becomes on-time delivery is a metric. It's a way to measure how well you did what you said you were going to do. So if I make a promise to ship these 100 out on Monday and I ship 95 out on Monday, that means I met 95% of my promise. So that's on-time delivery. With absorption, I really, Sam, you know, especially in the context of S&OP, absorption to me is an indicator that somebody is measuring the wrong things, because absorption is about volume. Absorption is about throughput. It's not about making what's right. It's just about making. So what I prefer is schedule adherence, is how well you, from a manufacturing perspective, how well you did based on what the plan is. So similar to on-time delivery, schedule adherence is a promise. If we think about it as a fast food menu, and I'm at the counter and I say, I need 5 hamburgers, 4 cheeseburgers, 3 French fries, and 2 Cokes. So it's 5 hamburgers, 4 cheeseburgers, 3 French fries, and 2 Cokes. That's my schedule. Now, the kitchen, the manufacturer, if they make 7 hamburgers, 2 cheeseburgers, 6 French fries, and 4 Cokes, they didn't make what was requested. So their schedule adherence would be very, very poor. So if it's 5 hamburgers requested and 4 hamburgers made, right? 4 out of 5 is 80%. They would have 80% schedule adherence on that item. So just like on-time delivery is a promise made versus a promise kept, schedule attainment is that version of a promise made, a promise kept. So how well a manufacturer or the manufacturing operation delivers based on what they said they would deliver, that's schedule adherence. So the better your schedule adherence, it means you're doing a better job making the right parts at the right time. You know, whether we're talking about tires or machined couplings for the aerospace industry, did you make what you said you were going to make? That's schedule adherence. And then on-time delivery is, did you ship when you said you were going to ship? So that's how those two metrics really dovetail in together.
Okay, so let's talk about the SMB landscape. And obviously, these metrics sound so exciting. I mean, if all of the manufacturers had access to these metrics, it'll be amazing, because you will know so much about your customers, so much about your products. But when I look at the SMB landscape, majority of the time, even if they claim that they are using the ERP system, in my experience, let's say for the scheduling, they are probably running a lot of their sales and operations function on probably spreadsheet or doing the manual data collection. So even though these metrics could be powerful, in your experience, do number one, manufacturers and distributors, are they able to track these metrics? And if they are able to track, how accurate are these metrics in your experience when you go across different manufacturers or distributors?
So Sam, it's really interesting, because in some cases, the metrics a business measures are, well, quite simply, the wrong metric. So a business may say, hey, what are our past due? What are our back orders? Right? How late are we with the customers? That's a horrible metric. If you're using past dues to measure your business, you're measuring the wrong thing. It needs to be, okay, what's our on-time delivery? And on-time delivery, Sam, you can use your ERP to measure it. You can absolutely, as you're starting out, use a spreadsheet. Here's the date I said I was going to ship it. Here's the date I actually shipped it. Did I hit it? Did I miss it? Right? It's very simple. It's a very simple metric. And it's one of those metrics that you literally could start in an Excel spreadsheet, right? It's maybe not sustainable in a spreadsheet, but it's a great way to get started. And having metrics that matter and having everybody understand what they are, even if it's just 2 or 3 critical metrics, right? That's a start. That's a foundation. So if I got into a business and they weren't measuring anything, the two places I would start is what is your on-time delivery? That's the delivery perspective. And then for manufacturing, what I would measure is what's your throughput?
Yeah.
How many pieces did you put in the shelf? How many pieces did you put into inventory versus how many pieces you need to put in inventory? So I had worked with a manufacturer that makes sunless tanning. It's a cosmetics manufacturer.
Yeah.
And during their peak season, they needed to put 50,000 units a day on the shelf to support all their customers, all their salons and boutiques. So they knew they needed 50,000 a day. That was the denominator for the manufacturers. And their throughput, their transfers to finished goods, what they put on the shelf, that was the numerator. So anytime they were less than 50,000 units a day, they knew they were going to fall behind.
Yeah.
Anytime they were above 50,000 units per day, they knew that number one, they were meeting the needs of the business. And number two, they were getting a little bit ahead. So by looking at, from a manufacturing perspective, how many pieces do I need to make a day? Whether we're talking about machined couplings or tires or cutting tools or bridge blocks, how many do I need to make a day? And how many am I actually making? So those two metrics, right? It's the supply and the delivery of the demand, those two metrics is where I would absolutely recommend a business starts.
Okay, so I'm going to touch a little bit on the scheduling part. So majority of the time that I personally have seen, especially in these small to medium sized businesses space, the scheduling is not really as sophisticated as I would like to see from the automation perspective. And they typically have a lot of manual intervention in the process. And when we talk about any planning or decision making, in my experience, the reliability of data or metrics is going to be significantly important. So when I look at these metrics, and let's say if a business is tracking these metrics using a spreadsheet, obviously in case of scheduling, there is going to be a lot of handshake there. In terms of the process collaboration, in terms of the parties involved, you are going to have your production involved, you are going to have your procurement involved, you are probably going to have your finance involved as well. So in your experience, how scalable the process is going to be if they tracked the entire scheduling on the spreadsheet, also the entire sales planning on the spreadsheet? I mean, is it realistic? Are these metrics going to be reliable? Is planning going to be reliable?
So, Sam, the more complex a business becomes, the less reliable and sustainable a spreadsheet will be. So yeah. If you are a business that has two products, literally you only make two products and it's extremely high volume, yes, you could probably track it on a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
But once you get into a business, and this is when it's critical to look at, what does the business look like? Is it a make-to-stock business where people order and it's in inventory? Or is it a make-to-order business where something is not manufactured until an order is received? So that's the first split. Is it a make-to-stock, make-to-order? And then even below that, one and two levels down is, what's the relationship between volume and mix? So you may have a business that has four, five, six different products, and they all sell at a relatively high volume, right? So that's a high volume, low mix. Pretty straightforward to plan and track the metrics and have conversations with the sales team.
Yep.
And predict financially, okay, if I make this many, it's going to cost me this much. It's going to generate this much revenue, and here's my profit. Pretty clean, pretty predictable. Now, as the number of SKUs, as the number of products grows and the relative volume of each one of those shrinks, so low volume, high mix. So if you imagine a grocery store, everybody shops, everybody eats. So if you were in the grocery store and you're in the cereal aisle and there were two cereals to pick from in the entire aisle, that's it, two cereals, it would be pretty easy to predict how many of cereal A and how many of cereal B. Now, we go into a supermarket today and literally an entire aisle is full of cereal. You've got healthy cereal, kids cereal, fiber cereal, traditional cereal. There's literally, if I had to guesstimate, there's probably 90 different types of cereal, and they each sell in different volumes. If I was a forecaster trying to predict for the grocery store how many of each I needed to order on a daily, weekly, monthly basis, I would lose my mind if I tried to do it on a spreadsheet. It would not be practical. It would not be possible. Right, so that's where the strength of the ERP comes in to say, hey, the more complex the business, the more SKUs there are, developing metrics that matter and tracking them on a consistent basis, it's got to be done through an ERP, right? So if you're a small business with five SKUs and relatively low volume, yeah, a spreadsheet could suffice. It may not be sustainable in the long term, but it could suffice.
Yep.
But if you're a business that does any volume, if I had to draw an imaginary line in the sand, I would say any business that has more than $2 million of revenue and sells more than 10 different parts or products, you need an ERP in some way, shape, or form, because the planning is quickly going to get exponentially that much harder if you try to do it on a spreadsheet.
Yeah. In fact, Amici, I was going to have the same comment. When we look at these small to medium-sized businesses, as you mentioned, the example of two products, that is very rare. In fact, these small to medium-sized businesses tend to be slightly more complex. If you even look at these startups, they are trying to sell whatever they could in their power. And that actually makes the whole planning and the product planning very complex. I honestly don't know a business that simply sell one or two products. And typically, the complexity of SKUs is probably going to be slightly more in case of small to medium-sized businesses than in the enterprises, because they tend to plan their products slightly better. And I have seen in the enterprise space where they might have, let's say, just some SKUs, just because they have the brand authority, they have the sales authority in the market, and they don't have to sell 5,000 products. They are only selling, let's say, a couple of products, right? Because the product is already proven, the market is already proven. So what is your experience on that?
It's really interesting, Sam, in that in some ways, every business is unique. Every yep. business has its unique characteristics and its own really specialized needs. And in other ways, ultimately, whether you're a manufacturer or distributor, right, you buy something, you transform it, you add value, and then you sell it. Right. So we're at 100, if we're flying in an airplane, 42,000 feet, businesses all look the same.
Yeah.
And it's really understanding. And that's where I look at it. It's really understanding, hey, what are the basic needs of the business? How can we meet those needs? And how can we scale the solution as the business grows? I don't want to have a solution for $1 million business and then put a solution in when that business hits 3 million and put a new solution in when it hits 10 million, right? I want to have a solution that scales. And when we look at sales and operations planning process, I've done it in $20 million businesses and I've done it in $2 billion businesses.
Yeah, yeah.
The process scales. And as the process scales, yes, there's more resources and more technology that's required. But ultimately, at its core, the process is still the same.
Yeah. All right, Mike. So that's it for today. Do you have any last minute closing thoughts by any chance?
For me, I look at inventory like the story of Goldilocks and the three bears. And Goldilocks went in and this porridge was too hot and this porridge was too cold.
Okay.
From inventory perspective, it's do I have too much inventory and it's going to kill my cash flow?
Yep.
Or do I have too little inventory where my customers are going to hate me and they're going to take their business somewhere else? So finding that Goldilocks zone of just right. If that's something that sales and operations planning process really, for me, is that's the goal. I want to have just the right amount. It means my customers are happy, cash is flowing, the business is profitable, and I can grow my business.
Yeah, and my personal takeaway from this conversation is going to be the Goldilocks is not just from the inventory perspective. That is going to be the Goldilocks for your growth, also for your business. On that note, Mike, I want to thank you for your time. This has been a powerful and very insightful conversation.
Thank you, Sam. I appreciate the opportunity, and I very much look forward to our next conversation.
I cannot thank our guests enough for coming on the show, for sharing their knowledge and journey. I always pick up learnings from our guests, and hopefully you learned something new today. If you want to learn more about Mike, head over to mryangroup.com. It's mryangroup.com. Or email him directly for 5 tips you can action today at michael@mryangroup.com. It's michael at mryangroup.com. Links and more information will also be available in the show notes. If anything in this podcast resonated with you and your business, you might want to check out the related episodes, including the interview with Ian Pratt, who discusses how to distinguish between the need for additional resources and operational bottlenecks that need to be optimized before investing further. Also, the interview with Kevin Lauren from New Warehouse Podcast, who discusses why standardization plays a key role in inventory planning. Also, don't forget to subscribe and spread the word among folks with similar backgrounds. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please review and rate us on your favorite podcasting platform or DM me on any social channels. I'll try my best to respond personally and make sure you get help. Thank you, and I hope to catch you on the next episode of the WBS Podcast.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the WBS Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform so you never miss an episode. For more information on growth strategies for SMBs using ERP and digital transformation, check out our community at wbs.rocks. We'll see you next time.